This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If we do not have a credible, not just a deterrence, a credible deterrence with the Iranians, these attacks are going to escalate. They're going to come faster. They're going to spread beyond Syria and Iraq, and they will involve weaponry of increasing sophistication and lethality.
That was U.S. Senator Marco Rubio on the U.S. military's presence in the Middle East. Details coming up. Also, Germany's president seeks forgiveness for colonial brutality in Tanzania. And Britain's King Charles is in Mombasa on the third day of a visit to Kenya. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. So we start with our top story. After 2 days in the capital, Nairobi, King Charles and Queen Camilla traveled to the port city of Mombasa, the original capital of British East Africa. There they watched UK-trained Kenyan Marines stage a mock beach landing. And Kenya and the United Kingdom have a long-standing defense cooperation, and in May this year, they partnered to create the first Marine Military Commando unit meant to boost the Kenyan military as an anchor of East Africa's regional stability and security. Our reporter Salma Mohammed is standing by in Mombasa to bring us up to date on the third day of the royal visit to the former British colony. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Salma.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. Well, like you cued and talked about King Charles III on his tour visit in Mombasa. Mombasa residents were really anxious and the somber was very moody. People were in the streets waiting maybe to have a glance of the king passing by. But as you know, the security detail was very tight. And people just spot his motorcade moving in the central business district. And around afternoon hours, the king, accompanied by his wife, Queen Camilla, alongside the president of the Republic of Kenya, William Ruto, they went straight ahead to the naval base, which is a very big barracks around here. And so what happened really there, they were there briefly, and we understand that the Queen also had a program to meet gender-based violence victims and have a word with them, because this is something that she's very close to, talking to survivors, and they had a chat and talked on matters which touched on the girl child and women at large and how the government is supporting the victims. Also, we are aware that the king is supposed to follow traces of his family here in Mombasa, because his mother, the Queen Elizabeth II, was here in Kenya. So okay. King Charles is supposed to be visiting those places that her mother was here, and she was also able to experience Mombasa. So he's going to follow those footsteps.
So, Salma...
But something else, yes.
Hold on just a minute. Charles' first visit to a former colony since ascending to the throne last year has been marked by questions about abuses during Britain's nearly seven decades of rule there. You know, during the 1952-1960 Mau Mau revolt in central Kenya, some 90,000 Kenyans were killed or maimed and 160,000 detained. So Charles has expressed his deepest regret at a state banquet for violence endured during Kenya's independence struggle, but some victims and their descendants said he fell well short of their demands for a full apology and reparations. Can you talk a little about that?
Well, in Mombasa, people were not really focused on that, because In this part of Kenya, most of the people here are of Arab origin, and others are coming from the Bantu. And this part of Kenya was not, at the time of the colonial era, this part was, it was in the Sultanate border. So Zanzibar was under Sultan of Zanzibar. So this part of Nini was not even interested in the politics of Kenya.
So what is next on their itinerary then?
Different. The reaction here is different because I talked to one Said Wali, who is an 84-year-old man here, and he was telling me about his experience under the British rule, and his feelings right now as Charles visits Mombasa, he feels that it just took him back to while he was working under the British rule. And he was talking about he was a very loyal worker working in the East African High Commission at that time. So, like, he was just thinking that maybe Charles can be of help to many of them that worked under the colonial government. So because he was talking about their benefits they hadn't received, and they have been following it up through the Kenya government. They understand from their counterparts in neighboring Tanzania and Uganda that they received their benefits for working under the companies that were ruled by the British. So he was trying to say that maybe Charles, him coming here is showing some hope that maybe he was sharing their grievances, that he would follow it up and make sure that they would also be given or awarded the benefits that they deserve working under the British rule.
So where are they heading after Mombasa, the King and the Queen?
Well, I understand the King, after just following the traces of her mother, Queen Elizabeth, while he was in Mombasa, visiting Fort Jesus, of course, the famous Fort Jesus, which is a historic place. He's also going to visit the famous Elephant Tusk, which is a mark in Mombasa. After that will be ending his 4-day visit in Kenya.
Great. So our reporter, Salma Mohammed, in Mombasa, thank you for your input.
Thank
you. During a visit to Tanzania, Germany's President Frank-Walter Steinmeier said yesterday he wanted to ask for forgiveness for abuses German colonists committed in the country and vowed to raise awareness of that history back home. What is now Tanzania was part of German East Africa from 1891 to 1918. It saw one of the bloodiest uprisings in colonial history between 1905 and 1907. Experts say 200,000 and 300,000 members of the indigenous population were brutally murdered during the so-called Maji-Maji Rebellion, mostly as a result of the systematic destruction of fields and villages by German troops. VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson spoke earlier with journalist Charles Kombe in Dar es Salaam to discuss Steinmeier's visit and the reaction to his comments.
Well, what I can say is that many Tanzanians seem to welcome his comments positively, and that they see his look of forgiveness over what German colonists did in Tanzania, then Tanganyika, is a good move to accept the wrongs that were done and open up a new chapter of cooperation. But I've seen also other people who have a totally different perspective. They are saying that despite him asking for forgiveness regarding what Germans did to the country during colonial era, there should be compensation to the descendants of the families that were killed and those who their relatives' skulls were taken to Germany. We know that Many skulls were taken to what was known as German East Africa. Many skulls of those leaders who fought against Germany colonies, their skulls were taken to Germany, and many are believed to be in Berlin. So many people are saying that they demand compensation from the German government. So forgiveness is a good thing, but what they need is that they need compensation to those people who were affected by German actions during the colonial era.
Now, overall, how do people see this visit by the German president? Do they think it will improve relations or change prospects for the country?
His visit is seen as a way, of course, of strengthening the relationship with Tanzania. As we know that Tanzania and German have maintained a strong diplomatic tie for the past 60 years, but the German colonial history has made it somehow a challenge for some of the people that see Germany as, having a past dark history in Tanzania. But these two countries cooperate in various areas, including trade, investment, among others. And the benefits of this, visit is expected to be in various areas of development. For instance, in the area of trade, these countries, Tanzania and Germany, they cooperate in the area of trade. And of course, for your information, that Tanzania exports more than 42 million US dollars worth of commodities to Germany, mainly tobacco, coffee, cotton, honey, and all that. And also, the country imports more than 237 million US dollars worth of commodity from Germany annually. So you can see that these two countries, they depend on each other in terms of trade. And also, Germany is among the top 10 countries that attract investment in Tanzania. And according to the data, by August 2023, more than 170 projects worth more than 400 US million dollars have been registered in the country. So what we can see is that many people are hoping that his visit will be beneficial to the country's economic development.
That was reporter Charles Kobe in Dar es Salaam speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson by phone. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Israel and Lebanon exchanged missiles overnight. Gaza's Ministry of Health has told NBC News that its main power generator has stopped working, putting the lives of hundreds of people at risk. Also, Israel's ground troops today continue to advance towards Gaza City as diplomatic efforts intensified for at least a brief pause in the fighting in Gaza's deadliest war. U.S. President Joe Biden supports a humanitarian pause. Secretary of State Antony Blinken returns to the region tomorrow and is expected to discuss that goal. Also, today, hundreds more foreign nationals have crossed into Egypt at the Rafah border point following weeks of talks on allowing them out among Egypt, Israel, the U.S. and Qatar, which mediates with Hamas. The Palestinian death toll in the Israeli-Hamas war has topped 9,000, and the Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says thousands more have been injured. In the occupied West Bank, more than 130 Palestinians have been killed in violence and Israeli raids. More than 1,400 people in Israel have been killed, most of them in the October 7th Hamas attack that started the fighting, and around 240 hostages were taken from Israel into Gaza by the militant group. Israel's ambassador in Germany says the government has asked other nations to send hospital ships to care for injured people in Gaza. Hospitals in the territory are overwhelmed with casualties and thousands of people who are taking shelter from the Israeli bombardment. Medical supplies and fuel to power the hospitals are extremely short supply. I spoke earlier with reporter Linda Grandstein in Jerusalem for a look at the latest developments.
Overnight and into today, there are very heavy fighting between Israeli soldiers who are now at the outskirts of Gaza City, fairly deep into the northern Gaza Strip, with Hamas gunmen. Israel says that dozens of Hamas gunmen have been killed, and Israeli army engineers are now working to blow up this entire network of tunnels that Hamas has built underneath Gaza. Israel says that the tunnels include a large Hamas command post, which is actually below the Shifa hospital. And so there is concern that as Israel tries to blow up these tunnels, that it will also kill innocent civilians. Now, Israel did tell the civilians to leave for a couple of weeks already from northern Gaza to southern Gaza, but many of them just don't have any place to go. In addition, the Palestinian Health Ministry says that more than 9,000 Palestinians have been killed since the beginning of the fighting. But I think it's important to say, first of all, that the Palestinian Health Ministry is affiliated with Hamas. It doesn't distinguish between Hamas gunmen and civilians. And in addition, several hundred rockets that Hamas has fired have fallen short. That was the whole story about that hospital that we had a couple of weeks ago when Hamas immediately blamed Israel. And it turned out that according to the best intelligence estimates, it really was an Islamic Jihad rocket that had misfired. But we're talking about heavy fighting in Gaza that has killed dozens of fighters, presumably hundreds of civilians today, and 18 Israeli soldiers.
And Linda, meanwhile, the UN has said the Israeli attack on Gaza's biggest refugee camp, the UN is saying that could amount to war crimes after maybe about 195 Palestinians were killed over the course of a two-day bombardment.
Yes, that was the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, where Israel says that there were some senior Hamas officials there, and has said that basically that Hamas has been using women and children as a human shield. And Israel has said that, you know, and in fact, according to one report, Hamas actually sent a group of women and children into the camp to protect it. And Israel has said that it's a, you know, unfortunate kind of casualty of war, that it wasn't targeting the camp, that it was targeting these Hamas gunmen.
And Linda, what is this humanitarian pause? Because President Biden has called for a humanitarian pause in Gaza, but stops short on calling for a ceasefire.
You know, first of all, it's not exactly clear, but presumably it would be a limited amount of time that the fighting would stop that would allow both at least some of the Israeli hostages that Hamas is holding, there are about 240 of them, including dozens of women and children, that they would be released, perhaps in exchange for Israel allowing fuel into Gaza. Israel has allowed more food and medicine and water, although human rights organizations say the need is still very great and there needs to be more humanitarian aid. But Israel has not allowed fuel, saying that the fuel could be used by Hamas for rockets or to power the tunnels. The hospitals in Gaza say that if they don't get fuel soon, the humanitarian crisis will be even worse. So there is some sort of an American and Qatar broker deal, perhaps, to temporarily stop the fighting. Now, Israel has said it won't agree to a ceasefire, that agreeing to a ceasefire, in effect, with leaving Hamas with the capability to still fight and to still fire rockets, it would, in effect, be a victory for Hamas. So it is said it won't agree to a ceasefire, but there hasn't been anything about whether or not Israel would agree to this humanitarian pause that President Biden mentioned, or exactly what he meant. In addition, Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrives in the region tomorrow, and obviously this is going to be one of the things on his agenda, as well as the humanitarian situation in Gaza.
That was reporter Linda Grandstein in Jerusalem. A year ago, Ethiopia's federal government and the rebellious authorities of the Tigray agreed in South Africa to a ceasefire after 2 years of bloodshed and atrocities that left hundreds of thousands dead. Dr. Edgar Gitua, international relations security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, says the end of fighting in Tigray has only served to spotlight the many other hot spots raging in Ethiopia, often along ethnic lines, troubling a vast and diverse country of 120 million people.
1 year down the road after loss of lives of over 600,000 dead because of the conflict and all that, there still exists a huge humanitarian crisis. So the post-conflict reconstruction phase, in my view, has only addressed the security issue. The security issue meaning the guns were silenced. There is a semblance of security. People are going back to their normal lives. They are attempting to go back to their normal lives. But there is still a lot of humanitarian crises. Social services are not up and running. A bit of telecommunications are back on. The internet is back on. The Tigrayan region at least is slowly trying to adjust to get used to being part of the world. But there is still a huge humanitarian crisis within the region because enough is still not yet being done. The guns could be silent. There is a semblance of peace, but people's lives have not gone back to normal.
Talking about aid, Doctor, after the ceasefire, help was flowing to the area, but the suspension of food aid to Tigray by the U.S. government and the U.N.'s World Food Program in May, you know, following allegations of misappropriation by none other than the government officials themselves, slowed efforts to address this chronic hunger in the region.
You know, with aid agencies and with the U.N., their assessment of the situation is that this food aid is not getting to the right people and that the suspension, unfortunately, has hurt the very people the aid was supposed to go to. So it is one of those things in the international system whereby you find the victims of the violence, the victims of the conflict, the women and children, the vulnerable women and children and old and elderly in the community are the ones who suffer the most for atrocities committed by other parties.
1 year on, peace holding in Tigray, but the Ethiopian government is very much fractured. The Amhara Fano sided with the National Army during the conflict with Tigray, but after the Pretoria Agreement, there seems to be a reversal of alliance, meaning the Prime Minister Abiy has now started fighting with Fano, siding with the Tigrayans.
It is the classic, the enemy of your, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. You know that Arabic saying of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And unfortunately, what Abiy is doing here is he's playing politics of divide and rule for his own survival. And what I predict happening going forward is that sooner or later, this is going now to backfire. The next phase, you will find the Fano and the Tigrayans siding with each other against now Abiy. Because this divide and rule, they will sooner or later realize that he is using them conveniently to remain in power and not addressing the real issues and the grievances that they have. So in my view, I feel this is not wise because he is eventually going to isolate himself because now the two people, the Tigrayans and the Farno, are going to realize we have fought each other, we have both helped Abiy to fight each other, and sooner or later, what will end up happening is that the Fano and the Tigrayans are now going to combine on one side and put Abiy on the opposite side, and then that is going to really become a very big conflict.
So, Doctor, what you're saying is the security conflicts, particularly in Oromoya, in Tigray, in Amhara, you're saying they're only accelerating what, the fracturing of Ethiopia and making that country a difficult country to govern?
Exactly. That is exactly what is going to happen. And unfortunately, I don't want to call it a prediction, but if this is not checked, what is eventually going to happen is that all these disgruntled groups are going to come under one umbrella, create a very strong opposition, either militarily, and really give Prime Minister Abiy a very hard time in governing and ruling Ethiopia. And when that happens, if he does not get kicked out of power, Ethiopia may just plunge into another very difficult civil war, where you have all these small disgruntled groups ganging up together conveniently to try and kick Prime Minister Abiy out of power.
That was Dr. Edgar Gitua, international relations security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University. He talked to me from Nairobi. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.